Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript,
CSS,
node module,
barbecue tips,
Git workflows,
breakdancing,
soft skills,
web development,
the hastiest,
the craziest,
the tastiest
web development treats.
Coming in hot,
here is Wes
Barracuda
Boss
and Scott
El Toro Loco
Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. It's almost the end of the year. Hopefully you're getting ready for Christmas and thinking about the new year. Every year we do our predictions for what's going to come the next year, but we also go back and look at what did we predict at the start of the year and how did we do? So today we're going to go through all the 2023 predictions, things we thought would pop, things we thought would flop, and how well we did. There's usually some hilarious ones on here where, man, we thought that would be so much bigger than it was and definitely didn't pop out.
I gotta say, Wes, after doing the pre-work for this one, we were popping way more
really?
Than we were flopping. Oh gosh, we were popping it like almost the entire episode. So I'm excited to talk through this.
Right. What else is popping, Scott?
What else is popping? Well, not our error log on Sentry. Why? Well, because we use Sentry to launch our website and we fix those bugs, right? Because
mostly
mostly, yeah, there's like a couple in there. but it's looking pretty good, honestly.
And
all of the significant ones are being taken care of. Because when you launch with a tool like Sentry, you can actually see the bugs. You can solve them. And then you can go on to do more important stuff like celebrate all of the predictions that you got right for 2023. So if you want to use Sentry, head on over to sentry.io. You can use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word. Honestly, it's an incredible tool. Check it out. And thank you for Sentry for presenting this podcast.
All right. So let's start it off with our first prediction was SSR, server-side rendered JS sites will become more the norm. And I think that has been very true. I think like the React server components got off to a bit of a rocky start. But it feels like people are starting to come around to them and sort of understand how it's working. And even if you're not into React server components, the meta framework revival, which is using SvelteKit, Next.js, Remix,
Solid State,
any of those frameworks out there, seems like everybody's sort of on board for this type of thing. And along with that, a whole lot less of GraphQL doing everything in the client, doing as much on the server as possible. Seems a bit simpler.
Yeah. And it seems like every other day somebody's talking about how JavaScript is becoming PHP. And that goes along with just doing more on the server, having things available for server-side rendering. And it's not only like become more of a thing, it's also gotten way easier overall. I think every single meta framework out there makes SSR pretty trivial these days, as you mentioned, the fact that these meta frameworks are existing. But like I think about, you know, the amount of things you have to do to get SvelteKit up and running server side is like not at all. You also have Astro, you know, glowed up to become less of a static site and more of a server side framework in addition. So like now you can write any front end framework you want and you can use Astro to do it with server side rendering and all that good stuff. Also, Remix, another one right there. So like just about everything is server-side rendered these days. And there's also a new host of tools coming out that are really like client-side less and server-side more. Like HTMX is more like, what can we do on the server side specifically and then not have to mess with client-side JavaScript as much.
We also said TypeScript inferred becomes hot. And I think we nailed this one. So the Syntax website itself, like, there's maybe like 6 or 7 custom types that we wrote
in
the entire thing. And everything else is inferred, meaning that it's either generated for us and simply by just using the framework itself, by querying data from the database, all the types ripple through from the query into the data result. If you filter or change that data or add some properties onto it, those types are inferred. And then you send it off to the client side. client side infers all of that data. And it is very, very nice, especially when you're working with data where like you, we don't just have a show type every single time, right? Sometimes we have a show just with the number and the URL. Sometimes we have a show with the guests and the transcript, and it's much bigger than that. And having being able to, for that to be inferred is super handy.
Word. Next one here we have is types in JS, which was definitely referring to the proposal type annotations. Now, I don't know where this thing lies, but the GitHub repo has not really been updated. The README was updated 2 months ago slightly with some meeting notes from March of 2023. So really early on in the year, nothing as of late, nothing really being modified in this for over a year in terms of like the actual implementation here. So I don't know where this thing lies. It seems like maybe not a ton of progress, but then again, some of this stuff can always feel like it's not moving even if it is. So, hey, you know, this might be a flop in terms of this, but I don't think we said that we were getting this year or even in another year from now. But I think we wanted to maybe see some progress considering it's still at like stage one and it feels kind of in the same spot.
I think it is being worked on. So if you look at the notes from March, basically there's a TC39 meeting where they go back and forth and talk about how this might work. And then the meeting notes end off with, I think you have several explicit supports and no one is objecting. I think you have a stage one.
So we have a stage one, yeah.
I guess. Yeah, I think so. And
it is listed as stage one.
So I think now what has to happen is they have to write the spec, you know? Like the GitHub repo is just an idea and they're just proposing it in TC39. And it's past the, like they pitched it to TC39 and saying, you know what? Good. Let's move it past stage zero, where it was just an idea. And now let's move it to stage one. And I think the actual creation of the spec, like this is going to be massive. Like how long did it take us to get promises in JavaScript? It took us many, many years. And that's because they want to make sure that they absolutely nail it. So
that'd be fun to get somebody involved in this.
Yeah, we should talk to them about like where it's at. You know, so a lot of this stuff is, all the meetings are open, like every single word that they've said. But it's not like there's no like website that's clear as to like where is this thing at right now. But I bet we'll see some more stuff for it. So it hasn't been squashed. And I everyone I talk to thinks, yeah, we should have that.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel the same way. Next one we have here is Dino gets hotter. You know, I would say that maybe it didn't get super hotter, but it did get hotter. It got more use. I think Dino grew up a little bit. There's like the hosting platform. I think it's a good option. I think there's a lot of cool stuff, but I don't know if I hear a lot. I hear more from like the bun folks than I do from the Dino folks. And it could 100% just be my bubble. I'm very, very cognizant of that. But yeah, I think Dino grew up, and Dino as a hosting platform, there's a lot of really great things if you're going to be firing up a Dino app. They got, didn't they get package.json support this year?
Yeah, they have very good Node support now, which is fantastic. I think we were a little off on this prediction saying Dino gets hotter, and I think it should have been standard server JavaScript or standard JavaScript runtimes get hotter, because what did we see in the last year? We saw like Cloudflare Workers continues to push on Winter CG. We see Bun 1.0 got released. We saw another new runtime called Winter.js pop up. Mm-hmm. We had the Jake from Fastify.
Fastly.
And it's amazing. Like we're seeing like, and we've seen several APIs being pushed for standardization across the board. We're seeing Remix being able to deploy to all of these different targets. We finally figured out, oh, did I even tell you that? We finally figured out what TikTok is doing with JavaScript. Did I tell you that?
Where did you get that information?
So one of the folks at Cloudflare listened to the Cloudflare episode, and he dug into it and he found a blog post in Chinese from somebody who works at ByteDance, which is TikTok's parent company. Mm-hmm. And so I read the whole thing. I translated it. And there's a bunch of stuff on GitHub. It's all in Chinese. That's why I didn't find it. And I tagged him on Twitter. I said, what are you doing? And he said, we were working on a very dense JavaScript runtime. And then I said, what do you do with that? And he says, hosting and I think processing are the two big ones. So I don't know if I can ask him any more questions, but I'm very curious if TikTok itself, or the fact that if TikTok's popularity spikes and they need to spin up a whole bunch of JavaScript, they wrote their own JavaScript runtime to do load balancing or something like that. So it seems like they are making their own JavaScript runtime, very similar to how Cloudflare did, because they need their own infrastructure to handle the types of work and the types of loads that they get.
Wow. Well, we did have, as the very next one, JS runtimes mature. So that could fit into that. JS runtimes mature. Yeah, I do think that is, we did say bun 1.0. So there we go. Hey, we got that one.
Yeah, nailed it.
So I'm going to give us a pop for this because, yeah, there are more JS runtimes. And I do think the idea and the concept of with Winter CG and all these things springing up, I think the fact that there's all these options now, it has matured as a landscape.
Next one we had here is we will see a new TypeScript type checker written in Rust. I don't know if we hit that one or not. We definitely still are only able to check types with the TSC. You can strip types with any number of different libraries out there very quickly, but there was an effort to actually rewrite the entire type checker in Rust so it would be much faster.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's still being worked on.
I mean, I'm going to put this one as a flop because I don't see any major progress on this. There's not a lot of recent commits. There's some version bumps and things like that here and there. There is an open issue from last month that says, what's the status of this project? And it has gone unanswered. So, that's never a good sign. If somebody says, hey, what's the status of this project? And it over a month later, there's still no answer to that.
Yeah.
It's still very inactive development, any of that stuff. I don't want to say this project's dead or anything, but I don't know if this project is, really flying or anything here. I don't see any branches that I'm missing.
Yeah, they had... Is this the same one? Vercel hired the guy that was doing this.
So maybe that's what's happened. Maybe it's being moved into a different place.
I'm not sure. Basically, I know this is incredibly, incredibly complex. Imagine how complex it is just looking at custom types in TypeScript where they loop and infer and extend. Just being able to understand some of these complex TypeScript types, let alone write the compiler in Rust, is, I can't imagine that being very, very easy. And also, I think that's probably a reason why Microsoft has not done it yet as well.
Yeah, it just doesn't look like there has been any major work done on this in the past year or so to say. Maybe 7 months ago was the last major update to this in any sort of regard. So yeah, something to keep an eye on for sure, but who knows where it's at right now. Next one we have is new JS APIs, of which we've talked about. New immutable array types, we've talked about. Enums, nothing happened there. Decorators, nothing really happening there. I mean, people use decorators. You can use them. The API has gotten more solidified. Temporal, still moving. Big API, still being implemented. Can't use it yet, although the polyfills do exist. I've personally used them. They work fine, but they can be a bit hefty in practice. Still, it's a cool API. Pipeline operators. Hey, do you know the status of the pipeline operators in JavaScript? It feels like that's one of those ones where there was two competing ways of doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't recall whatever the resolution was for that, or if there even was one, because at one point It was a significantly hot topic on Twitter of people arguing about the correct way to do this.
Yeah, pipeline hasn't been touched since 2021, so nothing hasn't been moved forward just yet. Again, I'm not sure if it's being chewed on or thought about, but certainly would love it. But you said decorators didn't see anything, but like in this year, TypeScript 5 released support for JavaScript decorators.
TypeScript decorators
were a different thing. But now TypeScript 5.0 comes out with like proper JavaScript spec decorators.
But that is just TypeScript. You know, it's not JavaScript.
No, it is. It is.
What I'm saying is that it's not the TC39 movement on that. You know what I mean? It's that the TC39 proposal has now gotten to a place where it's solidified enough that TypeScript felt comfortable implementing.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the actual decorator proposal
is still in stage.
Everybody thought that was kind of dicey because TypeScript implemented decorators before there was any spec, and then it was the wrong spec. So now they're implementing the hopeful spec. And I sure hope that it doesn't change again.
Hey, it's in stage 3, man.
Obviously, the folks at TypeScript say, like, this is not going to change. Let's put it into the language. And we did a whole show on decorators, too. So check that one out. We had another one here. Writing WinterCG spec becomes popular. I would say we nailed that one. WinterCG has only grown in the amount of people participating in that. So we've talked enough about that on this show. I think worker-ready, standards-based JavaScript is the future. Especially with things like Node.js landing web streams. You don't have to use the weird node version of streams. Standardizations are starting to come more and more into both Node as well as all the other runtimes.
Yeah. Next one here, edge rendering will become more common. And I feel like that's gotten to be the case, or at least it's gotten easier to do edge rendering with framework adapters and things like that. So, yeah, I would say that I have no data on this. So for me to just say, oh, yeah, it's become more common, it's easy to say that. But I don't know if that's actually the case. It just feels like it's at least more talked about now than it was before.
Yeah, I feel like like you said, the adapters are making everything a lot easier. And you might not even know that you're using, like you use a middleware on Vercel or Next.js. It's running on the edge, baby. You know, you might not even know because like the tooling makes it so much easier. The only reason you're going to know that it's not working is because you're trying to do something or use a package that isn't supported in that runtime.
Totally.
I have more predictions about the edge stuff, but I'll save that for our prediction show.
I'm excited for the prediction show.
Mm-hmm. A new JavaScript framework. did we get a new JavaScript framework?
We did. What's funny about this is that we wrote a note into the show notes that says, this feels like a free space on Bingo, which is very funny. We did. In fact, I'm struggling to recall the name of it because it got dunked on for like a week. But there was a new JavaScript framework that had this landing page that was like ripping on other JavaScript frameworks, but not accurately. It seemed like it could have been written in AI. It took like 4 pages before you got in any quick start things. I looked at the page for it and felt like, I'm pretty sure this is satire. And it took me a long time to discover that it wasn't satire. But now I've removed it from my brain entirely because it was spending a lot of time dunking on other frameworks and its docs. And I just said, you know what? Not for me.
page transitions API, that one popped this year, right? Like we saw it, we implemented in the new syntax website. We saw 6 or 7 different frameworks implement the page transition API into the routers, which is really cool. Lots of really neat demos. So absolutely nailed that one.
Yeah. And what's its current status in CSS3? Let's see, view transitions API. It's currently in Chrome. And it's not in Safari or Firefox just yet. But I have seen some conversation around like the fact that the animations aren't interruptible has become like a point. So maybe that is becoming a sticking point before these other browsers will implement it. But it does seem like a thing. Next one, Rust becomes more popular. You know, it seems like it's moving in that trajectory in terms of more people are using it and learning it and figuring it out. It does still feel like a very niche thing comparatively. But, you know, the Rust folks, people who write Rust are very up on it. They are very excited to use it. I myself, I've been using Rust for a number of things, mostly just experiments. And I gotta say, it is hard. It's so hard. I'm doing like a frame by frame encoding of raw video files in Rust by hand. And I'm having a blast doing it because it's such a far cry from the things I typically work on, right? But in the same regard, I find myself getting very frustrated at the type system sometimes, or just the restrictive nature of the language. I mean, I've been writing JavaScript my whole career. So it is a hard transition into Rust when you're doing anything more intense, or maybe you're working with bindings for macOS APIs or video or any of that stuff, right? So Rust, I would say, has become more popular, but in the same regard, there's a lot of languages I feel like that became more popular, like Zig, right? And whoever heard of Zig before Bun was using Zig?
One thing, and this kind of hits on one of our tooling one, is this is just announced yesterday. Prettier put out a $20,000 bounty for somebody to write a Rust-based compatible printer with Prettier. And the folks from Biome.js, which was Rome, did it. So the Prettier formatter, which is probably one of the most performance sensitive things that you need, because you literally hit save. Well, and it runs, cool. Yeah. People run formatters on save. I know some people don't like that, but
that's crazy.
You want it to be as fast as possible, because when you hit save, it should format your code as fast as possible. And it was written in JavaScript, or is written in JavaScript. So being rewritten in Rust is like certainly one of those things that is necessary.
If I type something and I hit save and my Prettier does not work, I lose my gosh darn mind.
Me too. I don't know how anyone lives their life indenting manually.
I cannot function without my Prettier working correctly.
The sense of calm I get when you get all the squiggles and everything's indented weird and you got brackets everywhere and you hit save and just indents it all properly, formats it nicely. I can't live my life without Prettier anymore.
Because I just type, man. I just type. And yep. I don't want to be beholden to any formatting. When I hit save, all just needs to fall into place for me.
Let me just shout out Sentry on this one right here. So in the Prettier blog post, they mention all of the open source contributions from different companies. And one of the contributions, specifically Syntax, Sentry has a whole bunch of money that they have set aside for open source contributions, and they do it based on the package JSONs in our projects. So they Syntax itself gets to crawl all the package JSONs, and Prettier is one that we use in every single project we have on our thing. So part of that money gets to go to Prettier, and Sentry is on the list of companies for donating $10,529 along with Front End Masters, Salesforce, Indeed. So pretty cool to see open source working.
Yeah, I love that.
WASM, more WASM was one of our predictions for this year. And I certainly think that we saw quite a bit more pop up this year. I specifically use WASM in the new Syntax website to do FFmpeg. So FFmpeg is like a C library or something like that. And if you want to run it on a server that doesn't have C, you can just run it via WASM, which is really cool. We saw a lot of stuff with Fastly, how they compile the Firefox JavaScript engine with your own JavaScript, and then they compile it all to WASM. And that's how they're able to get your Edge functions to run so quickly. And then there's a bunch of stuff around WASI, and there's some drama in the industry as well around WebAssembly, different specs and running WASM like locally? Is it going to be a replacement for Docker? So I think we nailed that one as well.
Yeah, drama in our industry. Who would have thought?
WASI drama, yeah.
Yeah. Next one, React Beta Docs will launch after a 5-year development cycle. That is correct. The React team managed to get their documentation complete after a 5-year development cycle. And those documents have launched, so you can use React docs that actually reflect what React is now, using hooks and functions as the primary means of writing React. Honestly, that one is a bit absurd. I understand docs are hard, but like, come on.
Yeah.
That took way too long.
You know, one React thing I did not see is like React is a Vercel project now, right? Like a good chunk of the engineers behind React moved from Facebook either to Vercel or to different companies. So obviously Facebook still has quite a few engineers and into React itself, but it feels like React hasn't released a stable version in well over a year at the time of recording. But you know who has released versions of updated React, and that is
features.
Yeah. That is Vercel and Next.js. So that's kind of interesting. I think people are salty about that, but I'm here for it. I don't mind that at all. I think that Vercel is a very good caretaker of React, and I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah. I think reputation wise, you're comparing the two companies. That's a losing fight for Facebook, right? Considering Facebook is Facebook.
We start to see CSS container queries in production. Nailed it. Yeah. What a good year. Hey.
Yeah.
What a good year.
Especially CSS wise. Wowzers.
Yeah. CSS, like, we didn't even predict half the stuff CSS gave us. It's unbelievable. But container queries, container queries are in all of the browsers. So depends on if you have to support older browsers or not. Let's pull up the can I use real quick for that. Yeah, it's in every single browser. The September 2022 was like the last holdout. It landed in Chrome and Safari at that same time. So as we recorded this last year, it was just starting to pop up. So now we've had a full year in every single browser. And like, I don't think that there's anything holding you back from using container queries. What do you think?
There wasn't, because we used them. And boy, howdy, there's a lot of times where I'm excited to use them as the thing that I've been wanting to use. And I think to myself, this is the perfect use case. And I'm so happy that I can do this without having to, you know, whip up some JavaScript with an resize observer or have to worry about any of that stuff. I could just use my container queries. And I got to say, every time I use them in the new syntax site, it felt as good as I would imagine it feeling. So definitely a big fan of CSS container queries. People are using them in production. I think, again, the more and more that people try them and get their hands dirty with them, the more you just see every site using them.
So I was just looking at can I use, and it says container queries was in only a month ago added. That is not true. It's been in there for like well over a year. So yeah, I think you can use container queries.
Yeah.
In production, obviously check your stats of how many people are visiting your website. Older iPads is probably the one that always gets you. But I think most websites will be able to start rolling out container queries without any issue.
Interestingly enough, Wes, I've been burnt by can I use like 3 or 4 times in the past month. We said something on this podcast and Brahmas had to correct us. And I was like, I got this from can I use. And, you know, I'm looking at can I use right now and still says that. And so I don't know how they update their data. That seems like a hard thing for them to keep track of. So maybe can I use isn't maybe the best place
but
to get 100% confidence on this stuff.
Brahmas said that the data used on MDN and the data used on can I use is the same database, right? Mm. There's nowhere else. There's nowhere else to check it. But I think there's a display issue, at least right now. Yeah, can I use needs a bit of an update. I can't take this brown and orange anymore.
I couldn't pick it to begin with. Yeah. Yeah.
And like they need to default to not showing us Baidu browser, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for real. In the same, you know, lines of something that's been different on Can I Use was, you know, color contrast is a function on Can I Use. This is not part of our predictions, but color contrast is a function. And I was looking this up recently to be like, all right, color contrast is not available in any major browser, not even behind a flag. Now, granted, it looks like it's behind a flag in Safari right now, but friend of the show, Adam Argyle, sent me a message saying, let me pull this up, that color contrast is behind a flag in Chrome, but its name has changed and it's now contrast color, not color contrast. And contrast color does not show up in Can I Use at all. So shrug, big old shrug emoji on that one, huh?
I just looked up Flexbox on Can I Use and it's like, it's supported as of Chrome 119. No, it's been in browsers for so many years.
It's just not showing any of the older Android browsers for mobile. All of the Chrome for Android on all of them is set at 119. So yeah,
every feature. I'm going to open an issue right now.
Look at you. While you do that, I'm going to talk about another one. We said CSS Subgrid would arrive here. And sure enough, CSS Subgrid is now in all major browsers, including Chrome for Android. Who knows what specific version, because Can I Use just shows us what we were just saying, 119. Either way, Subgrid is available in 79% of available browsers out there, which is pretty dang awesome, meaning that you should be able to be using Subgrid, even though I haven't personally used it just yet. We did say that was coming, and here it is.
Big fan of Subgrid and finally being able to have it. There's so many little issues that I've hit simply wanting to control over it, especially when you're using in React world where you must return a single element from the item. So if you simply just have to wrap your return value in a div, that's annoying, right?
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to have Subgrid for that type of thing. So you can Subgrid allows you to align children of a grid along with something that is not the direct descendant of the grid itself.
Mm-hmm. Simply having a wonderful Subgrid time.
Yeah.
Simply having a wonderful Subgrid time. I could continue singing my Paul McCartney Subgrid song, apparently. But I won't, because this is a Christmas episode, y'all. This is December 20th. This is sleigh bells coming in.
Yes.
Here.
More AI. Man, AI stuff exploded this year. When did ChatGPT come out? Was that this year or last year? I think it was last year at Christmas showing my family the
November 30th, 2022.
It just blew up. And then I showed my family Midjourney at Christmas last year and they just had their minds blown that you could just type in anything you wanted and like how much better it's got in the past year. So obviously been a massive year of leaps and bounds for the AI stuff. We saw integrated. Like we kind of saw a couple like waves. Like we saw the initial wave, which was everybody quickly tried to just add AI to their existing product. Then we started to see more like AI specific products. Then we saw all of those companies get shut down because ChatGPT plugins got rid of it all.
Just released it. Yeah,
man, crazy year. And I don't think that we're even starting to see the start of it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Tooling. I don't think it was necessarily a big year for tooling. I think because we all were just using, not all, but a lot of us were just using Vite. Rome officially closed its doors and was forked as Biome. So there's a big blog post about what happened with Rome. They had a bunch of funding and
drama.
None of it panned out, but it did get forked into Biome, which then Biome wrote the prettier formatter in Rust. So something good came out of that.
And then Biome forked Remix's logo.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. We did see Lightning CSS start to become a little bit popular. I know Tailwind's working on a new compiler that uses Lightning CSS instead of using PostCSS. So that was probably the biggest thing in the tooling space, which is an alternative to PostCSS.
Yeah, there's RS Pack too that became more of a thing, a Rust-based web bundler based on Webpack.
Oh, yeah. And TurboPack was like a new bundler that Vercel is working on. Didn't see too much about that. It's being worked on by the author of Webpack at Vercel, which is kind of interesting. So we'll see if something comes out of that. But it seems like most tools, with the exception of Next.js, have moved to using Vite.
Yeah, and Vite got even a new version recently, version 5.
Two of them,
5.
I think. 4 and 5 came out this year. And it doesn't even matter because it still works the same way. It's just faster and better.
It's so good. Vite is the best. And yeah, I can't imagine using anything else these days just because it's so simple. And for me, I'm all aboard the Vite train, definitely.
We had people sour on. We had two predictions of people souring on React. I think a little bit of sentiment, especially around the server component stuff. But I think,
or
that,
even the lack of updates from the Facebook team.
Yeah, just kind of understanding like what's going on here. But we did see quite a bit with Next.js come out, so that made up for it a bit. I think the people who are critical of React
got louder.
They're valid points, but also, like, everybody's still using Next.js, you know? Like, I don't think that's going anywhere, so I wouldn't sweat that too much. And then I also thought ESLint, I don't think that happened. ESLint is working on a new config, which was a huge sore spot. We had Nicholas Zakis on this year talk about possibly rewriting in Rust or parts of it being rewritten in Rust. And I'm still a big fan of ESLint using in every project. So I think I was wrong on that one.
Hey, you know what? You can have a couple flops. We're allowed a couple flops. We wrote, one of our predictions was Houdini does nothing. And I don't necessarily think that's true because we got at property, which allows you to essentially have typed CSS variables. Whether or not people are using that is a different story. But it does seem like the aspect of Houdini is coming slowly but surely and moving along. In fact, the Paint API has shipped in Chrome, Edge, Opera, and Samsung. Hey, those are all very similar browsers. Okay, let's take a look. It's under construction in Firefox and in development in Safari. Those are the two that are most important. So Paint API is still under construction in Firefox, in development in Safari. Safari has shipped properties and values and has shipped typed object object model, the type object model. And the spec has been completed for the Paint API. So, you know, Firefox is still major lag time here. Just about everything is under construction except for the animation, parser, and font metrics all have no signal, as in no work. But then again, the parser API and the font metrics have not had any work done to them on any browser. So It does seem like these things are moving. This is HoudiniReadyYet.com seems to slowly but surely fill in with green. We'll see how much further this gets over the next year.
The Firefox bug for implementing the Paint API, which is like that's the first one that literally everybody else has implemented, has not been touched in 4 years. There's not been a comment on it in 6 years. So this
silence
is huge. It's I think implementing this is incredible and very complex task. And I don't know if they see the benefit or they don't have the engineering for it. But if this does pick up, that might be the sword in Firefox is back. We'll see. That's too bad. But yeah, the rest of it's funny because I haven't really heard much about Houdini, but like starting to see app property pop up, which is pretty neat. So maybe maybe it's not Houdini that we want at the end of the day, but it's the APIs we made along the way.
We made along the way, yes. Yes, it's perfect. It's so good, yes. Well, that was it. I would definitely say after that review, a lot of popping going on, Wes.
87.9% correct.
Oh my gosh. So this is why you listen to Syntax, folks. Yeah. We're going to be doing our predictions episode for the next year, and I want to beat that. I'm not satisfied with that. I want to get like 99%.
Yeah, we need some like wild guesses too, you know? Like we can just...
I want to keep it safe so that way I can be right.
Oh, no. We need a section that will not be graded on.
Okay,
but like,
cool.
Like absolutely wild guesses, you know?
Done
like,
deal.
And maybe even like companies as well, you know? What's going to happen to different companies.
I love it, Wes. Let's get into the part of the show where we talk about sick picks. These are things that we pick that we like. Could be anything. Could be a podcast. Could be push pin picture holders. Could be a label maker. Or I think I even sick picked a type of oatmeal before.
Actually, it's funny. You sick picked that oatmeal. It's Kodiak, yes. Right?
Yeah.
So, we went and bought, we haven't been able to find the oatmeal in Canada yet, but we went and bought the pancake mix.
Oh yeah. You never, oh yeah.
It's fantastic. No, I hadn't had it before. And they stopped selling it at our Costco. I don't know if like you used to be able to buy a huge bag of it and we can only find it at Walmart now, but it's awesome. Like it's not it doesn't taste as good as regular pancakes, but.
Full of protein.
Yeah. It's full of protein. Like we give it to our kids right before school, fills them up with protein. And been a big fan of them. They cook up nicely, nice and fluffy. Doesn't taste like a sludge. Most protein pancakes are.
I've been a fan of the Kodiak cakes and the pancake or the oatmeal is very good as well. I'm going to sick pick a video game for the Nintendo Switch. Super Mario Brothers Wonder is a lot of fun. It's a side scrolling Mario game for the Switch. If you haven't heard of it, which I assume if you have a Switch, you've probably heard of this. But I just want to put my endorsement into the ring because. Man, this is the perfect type of game for families to play. You know, we've been kind of cautious about getting our kids into any kind of video games that aren't like straight up educational stuff. But yeah. What we've decided is that like, hey, on Sunday after dinner for like 1 hour, we can sit on the couch and all four of us, you know, my kids are 4 and 6. We can sit and play a Mario Brothers game all at the same time because there's four characters on the screen. And the two little kids' characters are Yoshis and they can't die. So they get a little bit easier time with it, right? They're not struggling. And we can all just journey through these worlds together. And they're doing it with us. It's at a fixed time for a specific time limit. And it's been a blast. So Super Mario Brothers Wonder, if you were considering it or you have a Switch and you play games with your family, it's a great game for that.
I'm going to sick pick something we sick picked a long time ago. I bought it from your sick pick. It's probably 3 years ago. The Tinoco vacuum.
Yeah.
You guys still rocking yours?
Yes. Tinoco. I have no idea.
T-I-N-E-C-O.
Yes.
Whatever it is. Basically, it's like a Dyson type stick vacuum. And I remember when you sick picked it. One of the reasons you sick picked it is because they sell every single part on their website that you can buy carte blanche, right? And yeah. That's big for being able to repair stuff. Because sometimes you buy this stuff on Amazon and it's like, oh, good. Like this one part broke and this company is gone defunct and they've rebranded as some other random company. But so this vacuum company, we've been loving ours and it's great to just something, they spill something, you grab it and quickly whoop, suck it right up. I found another one. We've been wanting to get one for the cottage and I found one just down the street from me on Marketplace. And the lady had it listed for $40.
Mm.
And it's like a $350 vacuum.
Yeah.
And her husband had like leaned it up against something and it fell and cracked a little piece of plastic on it. And so I went and bought it. And then I just glued the piece of plastic back together and brand new, boom, ready to rock. 2 batteries, everything you need. But if I didn't realize I could just fix it with glue, I was like, I just looked on their website and they sell the part that was broken for like $25. And I was like, this is what you need to do. This poor lady, not poor lady, she just got rid of it because one little thing broke. You should not be doing that with your items. you should be trying to fix them. And they obviously make it super easy. You can just order the part, swap it in. It's not a very expensive part like a lot of places do. So, vote of confidence for the Tinico vacuums. S11 or A11 are the ones that we have.
I really like that they have the hot swappable batteries. To me, is a big thing, because when I'm cleaning, I don't want that battery to die on me, especially if you can't plug it in and use it. So, yeah, hot swappable batteries in a vacuum cleaner is a killer feature for me. Also, if you're out there and you have one of these stick vacuums, whether it is a Dyson or a Tinico or any of these, clean your dang filters, folks.
Nobody knows that.
And they run so much better. Like, it's night and day. In fact, I was vacuuming out our rental car when we went to Hawaii, and the folks we were staying with had one of those vacuums. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to clean their air filter. And I cleaned it, and that thing was brand new. It was just humming along there. So,
man, I
got to say, if you have one of these, whatever, clean those air filters. They make a huge difference in the amount of suction.
You pretty much have to clean it every time you empty the thing. And people who have, like we have a plug-in Dyson as well. And, like, maybe once every 2 years, I clean the thing out. And the thing runs awesome because it's plugged into the wall and it's sucking grid power. But the batteries are so fussy with the filters being clogged. And that's the other thing. This lady was like, my husband just bought me a new one. And then I opened the filter and it came with an extra filter. And I swear she never changed the filter. It was caked. And like, no wonder you probably were happy to get rid of this thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Did you know that there's a filter in there?
Yeah.
And you can buy like replacement filters. There's two filters on this thing. You can buy
two filters and a cleaning attachment for the filter.
And it comes with the cleaning attachment. Yeah. So you don't have to get it dusty anywhere. You don't have to like shake it over top of the garbage can. But you can also just buy a pack of 10 filters and then just throw them in the like wash, or you probably put them in your dishwasher if you really want, if you don't feel like cleaning it that much. So it's easy. The aftermarket for this vacuum is also very good. So I love when there's like standard parts for something.
Word. Cool. Well, that's all I got.
That's it. Yep. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.